Om Patram Karne Bishwinu Yama Devaha Patram Pashe Makshabhirya Chatraha Stirai Rangai Stushtu Vagum Sastanubihi Vyashema Devahi Tanyadayuhu Swastina Indro Vrittashravaha Swastina Pusha Vishwavedaha Swastina Starsho Arishtanemihi Swastino Brahaspatir Tathatu Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. So we're going to, we're on verse 35, we just touched on it last week, we're going to it this week. Vitaraga bhayakrodaihi munibhirveda paragaihi nirvikalpo hyayam drishtaha nirvikalpo hyayam drishtaha prapancho pashamodvayaha prapancho pashamodvayaha. Vita raga Bhaya krodhaihi munibhihi veda para gaihi nirvikalpaha hi ayam drishtaha prapancha upashamaha advayaha. Okay. Prapancha upashamaha advayaha. So Shankara says, Tet e tet samyak darshanam stuyate. This samyak darshana, this that's been being unfolded, this is now being praised, exactly what the samyak. Samyak darshanam means this vision, clear vision, this clear knowledge, clear understanding. Sometimes, you know, for jnanam, for knowledge, they use darshanam or drishti, because the knowledge is aparoksha, it's something that has to be seen, something recognized. It's not paroksha, it's not something that's just intellectual, like an intellectual concept. It's something that you actually have to see, to recognize. So it's a direct, immediate knowledge. So it can be called darshana. Mm-hmm. Samyak, from the root drish, to see, or drishti means vision. Darshana means the seeing of something. So samyak means very clear, thorough, without doubt. So samyak darshana is that very clearly seen. And samyak darshanam is that, like jnana nishta, or clarity of when your knowledge is clear, doubt-free knowledge, your vision is clear, you know, there's clarity of knowledge, that's samyak darshana. And so this samyak darshana, which is moksha, George was asking, the samyak darshana itself is moksha. Clarity of vision without doubt is liberation, because the self is already liberated. Otherwise, by nature, you're bound, and no amount of knowledge is going to help you. No amount of action is going to help you either, because by your very swarupa, by your very nature, if you're bound, you're bound. What are you going to do about it? And Swamiji will joke, eat brown rice and do yoga. Eat brown rice, do yoga, follow the macrobiotics. But that won't save you, really. Won't really save you. It'll just prolong the inevitable, right? And so no amount of action, really, is going to help you. If you're bound, you're bound. If that's your nature, if your nature is subject to change, subject to birth and death, then as this one student we used to have here who was with the Ramakrishna, he was a sadhu for the Ramakrishna mission, a Western guy. He was a very elderly man. And he said, I just realized that I was living at the ashram and all that ashram. I'm just a spiritual maintenance man. You know? But that is our situation. We're spiritual maintenance maintenance beings, maintenance men, maintenance women, spiritual maintenance people. Because if you're having to continually clean up the problem, you know, because by your nature you're subject to change. If by your nature you're subject to change, then you have to keep working away at it to keep things organized and straight. This is the very problem with dharma. Dharma has to be practiced. means you have to maintain dharma. There's something you have to do, right? You have to veer away from adharma. You have to practice dharma. There's something you have to do. That means by you're in duality. And so you can't just relax. You know, there's no relaxation because there's always something that needs to be done. You know, and so this is if that's your nature, no amount of action is going to free you because the actions aren't going to stop. And no amount of knowledge is going to free you either because knowledge does not change your swarupa. Knowledge doesn't change your nature. So this is the situation. If knowledge doesn't change your nature, what this amounts to is either you're free or you're not. So if you're free, there's nothing for you to do about that. Because you're already free. What are you going to do? So what is the problem then if you're already free? Well, the problem is you don't know it. And if you don't know it, your whole life is built around the ignorance of your nature, right? If you don't take yourself to be yourself, then what do you take yourself to be, right? If I don't take the rope to be a rope, what do I take it to be? Well, if I take it to be a snake, my life is built around the snake. All of my emotions, all of my associations, everything is around the snake. If I take the rope to be a water streak, then everything is about the water streak, which I could just barely dismiss. But whatever it is, the reality is around of my life is around the water streak, not the rope. So if I take myself, my being, no matter what I am in reality, if I take myself to be a jiva, if I take myself to be a limited being, if I take my happiness to be something external to me to be reached, then that is the reality that I'm living in. All of my thoughts, all of my feelings, all of my pravritti, nivritti. Pravritti is all the things I go toward, all the things I go away from. All of those have to do with this self-concept. So we call it the jiva srishti, the jiva's creation, right? Built upon ajnanam. It's my imaginal life, the imaginal life superimposed upon Ishvara srishti, the way things are. Ishvara srishti is vyavahara. The vyavaharika satyam, this creation which is not the jiva's projection, which is Ishvara, that has an empirical reality to it, right? It's not created by me as a jiva. But it has an empirical reality. Sometimes instead of calling it vyavahara, we call it shared reality. It's a shared, agreed upon reality. It's where we can have science, where we can agree upon this. We can all come over to this house because we agree that there is a house here that we can come to. It's a shared reality. It's vyavahara, that's Ishvara srishti. Your knowledge is not going to change Ishvara srishti. Your knowledge is not going to change something that is actually in empirical reality. Your knowledge is going to change the jiva srishti. It will change your imagination, or it will change your misconceptions of reality. And so if you look at it here, in terms of the situation that we have here, we have the nature of the self, which is not going to change. That is, if we want to do it in terms of orders of reality, the nature of you, the conscious being, is what we call paramarthika satyam. It is free. Yourself in reality is free from time, it's free from space, it's not objectifiable, it is what it is, there's not anything that anybody can do about it. Nothing can touch it. Nothing can touch your own nature. It exists as a reality. In Vyavahara, this whole maya, from the standpoint of the jiva, the Ishvara srishti, srishti means creation. So Ishvara srishti is the Lord's creation. This Vyavaharika satyam, this empirical reality, the shared reality that we all enjoy, from your standpoint as a jiva, there's nothing you can do about that either. What are you going to do about it in terms of knowledge and ignorance? You can act upon it, you can do things to it, but your knowledge or your removal of ignorance is not going to change it. In other words, let's look at the rope snake. My knowledge of the rope, right, is not going to change the rope. My recognition of the rope will just mean that the rope is there and I recognize the rope. But if the pratibhasika satyam means the subjective reality, the jiva srishti, the jiva's creation, that is something that is changed dramatically by knowledge. So if in vyavahara there's a rope there and I mistake it for a snake, when I gain knowledge of the rope, the subjective projection is removed. Right? What is subjective is removed. What is objective is not removed. I'm talking just in vyavahara now. You know, even in all of psychology, when we're seeing the analyst and all of that, we're working on really removing subjective projections from vyavahara, from empirical reality. So that every time, you know, somebody who looks like my mother raises her eyebrow, I don't have a mother reaction. Right? All of these subjective projections or these subjective hurts and pains are removed from vyavahara. Right? And say, you, as you become more self-aware, for instance, if you're having a reaction towards somebody, you can recognize, is that really a reaction toward that person, or is that something that's going on in me? We learn how to kind of go to that reaction and say, you know, what's that really about? Is that reaction jiva srishti, you know? Or is that something that's actually happening out here that has some sort of empirical reality? So our knowledge, when we as jivas, as individuals, gain knowledge, that knowledge is not going to change empirical reality. It's not going to change what is. It's not going to change my being. But it is very powerful. The removal of ignorance is very powerful in terms of changing my subjective reality. If my subjective reality is based upon ajnanam, then by the removal of that ajnanam, which means the gain of knowledge of what is actually there, by the removal of that ignorance, so here it would be the removal of self-ignorance, there's an incredible change in terms of the elimination of the projection I was living in. Right? So that's huge. It's huge, but nothing has really happened, even though so much happens, because all the mental angst is removed. We appreciate this all of the time just in the world. When you take something to be one thing, your emotional world is going to be toward that. Whatever that concept is. Whatever that experience is. If you see the experience differently, the whole emotional being is different. So, what if I am entrenched in self-ignorance, which everybody is until they're not. You know? I mean, it's not like you're kind of born with one foot in and one foot out. You're born with all feet in. In terms of, just think of the dream, the dream characters in the dream. They have all feet in. The whole being is surrounded, is actually existing within the creation, and all of your means of knowledge are only meant to experience the creation from the standpoint of you, this body, mind, sense organs. That's the dream character's situation. So what is going to make that dream character look around and say, you know, what's really going on here? Is there something else going on? Who am I really? What's the truth of this whole thing? There's not very many people that bother with that. Okay, so this is where now we're getting into the verse. It's not very many people that bother with that. Question doesn't even arise, you know, for them to wonder what is going on here. And one of the reasons that the question doesn't arise is because there's too much what we call raga dvesha, likes and dislikes, too many desires, I want this and I need this, and I need this and this and this in order to be happy, in order to fulfill myself. And so I'm totally, totally conditioned. I'm totally contained within that illusion. And there's a lot of things to validate that illusion. The way that the mind works, if I want something and I say, like I look at some situation and say, I need that in order to be happy, and I go after that, and I feel all the angst of people trying to not help me to get that, and then I feel the people love the people that are trying to help me to get it, and finally say, I get it, finally, with a strong desire, at that moment my mind gains a shantivritti. This is the whole psychodynamics of the illusion. When you fulfill a desire, any desire, you fulfill a desire, you get a shantivritti. That's your reward. A shantivritti. And what does that mean? Shantivritti means peace. Now the thing is, whenever the mind is at peace, like a clear water bucket, it reflects clear water, it reflects the sun, right? The sun is manifest in it. So whenever your mind has peace, the wholeness of yourself reflects in that mind, which gives us the experience of happiness or joy or bliss. That's all it is. Peaceful mind, bliss. Relate be all because of the relationship with the ananda, with the self. So, but we don't think like that. We don't think, ah, oh, shantivritti, I'm with myself. We don't think like that. We think, oh, shantivritti, we think, ah, oh, you make me so happy. Ah, oh, this job makes me so happy. Ah, oh, this person makes me so happy. Because shantivritti is always related to the object of the desire, which has been fulfilled. They go together. And then I need you. And I need the job. I need the person. I need the money. I need this. I need this. Whatever I think is going to give me that ananda, this is what we call anyonya adyasa. This is the superimposition. I get this. If I get this, I become happy. But you know what? This is Bhagavan's trick. The problem is this. It works every time. Every time. When I get this, when I fulfill my desire, I become happy. Every time. What we don't realize is that I become happy only lasts for a moment. It only lasts for a moment. The object stays, but this happiness blip on the screen only lasts for a moment. That's what we don't realize. It takes, I guess, beginningless lifetimes to come to that realization. Because then we just think, my mind will just say, yeah, now I need this. And so that's the samsara. So it's not an ordinary thing, actually, to come to a position where you're questioning this illusion, where you're starting to realize, wow, this doesn't work. It doesn't work. I do become happy, but only for a moment. And then you see that again and again. And that there's no possibility, really. Then you start analyzing the world. There's really no possibility that it's not going to be like that. Because everything is in continual flux. And so then you start gaining this mumukshutvam, where you're starting to realize that you are trapped in this situation. You're trying to make yourself happy and whole and complete in a situation that, by its very nature, simply cannot give it to you. It can't do it. By its nature. So then you become very trapped. And then you throw your hands up to Bhagavan and you'll say something like, if you're there, if you exist,
it's time.
If there's a way out of it, now is the time. Save me. Some way, you have some way of communicating that. Right? And then now the adhikaritvam begins. Until this point, you're not an adhikari. You're not a qualified student. You're not a seeker. You're just not, because you're still going after sukhavrittis. Sukhavrittis, happiness based upon the world. You still think it will work. If you think it will work, then you just have to, you have the solution. You know? There is a solution out there, you just have to find it. You don't become a mumukshu when he desires liberation. Until you realize there isn't a solution. Then you're a mumukshu. Otherwise, you can It's your fault, you're stupid, or you made this mistake, or you could have done this better, and that could have worked out better, and now if you could only do this or that, or I just totally screwed my whole life because I made this mistake, and this mistake, and this mistake, and now the whole thing is wrecked. It goes on and on and on and on. But at some point, you realize this, no. Even if I did everything perfectly, the universe cannot give me what I'm seeking. There is no stability here. It's not possible. There's the mumukshutvam. Now, when that mumukshutvam happens, that doesn't just happen. The mumukshutvam happens because there's a sequence of things that go on in your mind. The first thing that goes on in your mind, the little awakening, is what we call viveka. This viveka, this discrimination, and this if the whole thing for the viveka, the whole statement is nitya anitya vastu viveka. What that means is, I all of a sudden start to realize that I am seeking something stable. Like I would like to just be happy and whole. But everything here that in the world is anitya, is time-bound. And I'm seeking something that is not time-bound. Nitya, anitya, vastu, viveka. I'm looking for a vastu, for something that is time-bound. I would like to be happy, whole. I don't want to be on the sukha-dukha, 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 like the man drowning in the river. They use this example. That if somebody, say, in the ocean, a person's in the ocean and is literally drowning because the tidal wave, the tide keeps pulling them down. They get up, they get some air, the tide pulls them down. They get up, they get some air, the tide pulls them down. When they get up and they get some air, they think, oh, thank goodness, psh, tide pulls them down. They get up, air, oh, thank goodness, life is wonderful, psh, tide pulls them down. And all of a sudden, when they're up, they're not wanting to be up anymore. I mean, who cares if you're just going to be pulled down again? Right? That is the viveka, that recognition that you cannot get anything lasting from something that by nature is time-bound. It's not possible. That one starts the mumukshutvam. How am I going to get out of this dilemma? And it also leads to vairagya. Vairagya is that dispassion. It's like, say you're up for air and you know that in any second you're going to be pulled down again. You don't have that same desire for the air. You would like to be pulled out and put onto the shore. You don't have a desire for a momentary gasp of air. You want something else. You want to be put on the shore so that you can breathe normally, right? And so this gasp of air, you'll keep going, of course, because you want to live. But your attitude toward it is a little different once you realize that it's only going to be a gasp, you know, and not any relaxation to just breathe like a normal person. Right? That's what we call vairagya. If something is not able to give me at all what I'm seeking, even though it might give temporary solution, you just don't have the same relationship with it anymore because you realize it's not really what you're looking for. That is the development more and more of that buddhi that has this adhikaritvam, that is really ready to listen to something else. Because you don't have the solution. As long as you have the solution, then you're out for your solution, not for really recognizing what you need to recognize. So the first thing he starts with here, he's talking really about the adhikari, more than the adhikari, because he's praising at this point the samyak darshana, that clear vision. So he's talking about the person who now has the clear vision. So say if you take viveka, when you're a mumukshu, the viveka is only half there. You realize everything is anitya, everything is time-bound. You don't know what is nitya. what is timeless. In terms of the vairagya, you know that these things won't give you the ananda, the fullness that you seek, but the mature vairagya is you have vairagya, that dispassion, because you're whole. It's not that I have dispassion. When you start out, I have dispassion toward all of these things because they cannot make me whole. That's why you have the vairagya. For jnani, you have the vairagya because you are whole. Because you've discovered your nature, then you're free. I can have this or not have it, it's fine. It's not that I'm trying to get rid of it or not trying to get rid of it. I'm whole, and as a whole person, I can have these things. That's mature. Vairagya comes out of the ananda, whereas when you're a mumukshu, the vairagya comes out of it, can't give it to me. Okay? So viveka is only half, everything's anitya, can't give it to me. But I don't know the nitya. The full viveka is I am nitya, I am free from time, free from change. The vairagya is I am whole and complete. I don't need to gain ananda from you. I've seen totally through that illusion. Mumukshutvam, I desire liberation because this world is not capable of giving it to me. The other side of mumukshutvam is moksha. I'm liberated because I know myself. I've recognized the self as the liberated being that I am. So all that's the full side of it. That's the samyak darshana. So now he's describing this. Vita, the one who is free from, the one who is without. Raga. Raga and dvesha go together. Raga means I want this so that I can be happy. That's a raga. That's the full template. Raga. I want this so that I can be happy. Dvesha. Dvesha isn't here, but Shankara puts it in his commentary. Dvesha, mm-hmm. I don't want this.
Mm-hmm.
I hate this. Why? Because if it's here, I'm unhappy. I don't want this. Negative, negative. So I want this rug. I want this so that I can be happy. Dvesha, I don't want this so I can be happy. Raga dvesha. Vita raga dvesha. The one who is free of raga and dvesha. Because I am the source of ananda, and that's not coming and going. So I don't need to have this to be happy. And I don't need to get rid of this to be happy. Because the ananda is my own nature, my own swarupa, and it's free of time. The ananda, which is my own swarupa, my own nature, isn't coming and going. It doesn't have a beginning and an end. And it's not, I'm no longer superimposing the ananda of my being onto the world. If I'm not superimposing that ananda, the wholeness of myself, onto the world and then trying to seek it, which is all the cause of what we call moha, that ajnanam. If I'm not doing that, then happily, you know, I enjoy these things and happily, you know, I suffer these things. Because the life, you don't get knowledge and the life just becomes nice to you. You gain knowledge and life is still challenging. Yeah. So it's really nice things. It's always difficult things. But I can, you know, be with the nice things and I can let them go, and I can be with the difficult things and be with them as long as they're here, and then let them go when they go. I can be objective. That's Swamiji's word for all of this. I can be objective. So the one who is free from this raga dvesha. If you're free from the raga dvesha, from these likes and dislikes, the full template is important here. I like this, I want this, so I can be happy. Mm-hmm. That's a raga. It's for jnani, I like this, and I like this, and I don't like this, and I don't like this, but it doesn't have anything to do with so that I can be happy. It becomes preferences. That's the difference. Otherwise you think, oh, I become a jnani, I become like, sometimes they will joke about some Buddhists, Zen Buddhists, sometimes as being walking heads. I don't know why they do that, but they do. Buddhists joke about themselves like that. Walking heads. You ever heard that?
Mm-mm.
A walking head. It means they're so objective that they have no heart.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, they could call a Vedanta, they could call anybody like that. Where when you say, mm-hmm. I have knowledge, I'm enlightened, you know. And so everything is all the same for me. I have no likes. I have no dislikes. You just walk through life flatly, like flat. But that isn't so. You have preferences, you know. All colors are the same for me. All foods are the same for me. It's not true. You have preferences. But the difference is, and you have things that you would prefer this over that, but your ananda isn't tied up with it. That's the difference. That's the vairagya. So you have likes and dislikes become preferences, not the full template. I need this so that I can be happy. That's the full template. That so that I can be happy is not there. And then the preferences of just that you've collected along the way as you grow up remain. So the raga dvesha become mithya. They don't have what we call, they don't have the sting. If the raga and dvesha are not mithya, means, if they're mithya, means you're no longer superimposing your wholeness on them. Right? Then they're mithya. If they're mithya, there's no krodha. So here it says, vita, raga, ra. Or he has baya next. We'll take baya next. If there's no raga dvesha, then there's also freedom from baya. Baya means, you know, I need this to survive. I need this to be happy. I need this to live. I need this to be whole. In Advaita, there, that need is not there. In fact, the only way to get rid of baya means fear, is in non-duality. Because within Dvaita, anything can happen. Anything can be lost. Anything and everything is lost, because everything is time-bound. That means every moment is threatened. Every moment. And so in the Taittiriya Upanishad, it says, even the slightest whiff of Dvaita is fear. The slightest whiff of duality brings bhayam, is the bhayahetu. It's only in advayam that there is no fear. Because nothing can take away, when there's only one without a second, who's going to take away what from what? So the bhaya resolves. So he says, vita, raga, bhaya, no fear, freedom from fear, krodha, freedom from anger. There's no anger. Because anger comes when my desire is not being met. Look at what causes anger. What makes anger rise? I'm not angry all the time. What's the hetu? Hetu means cause. What's the hetu for krodha? The krodha hetu. It's the cause for the anger.
I think someone's keeping us from being happy.
Yeah, exactly. That's the response. That's the response that's triggered. So say your ananda, the ananda of the self isn't subject to change. You can't even take it away from yourself. Nobody can take it away from you, and you can't take it away from you either. Nor can you make it better. These are all huge reliefs. Even it's a huge relief to know that the ananda, your own being, you cannot make it better. That's a big relief. It's as big a relief as you can't make it worse. You know, you can't make it, you can't hurt it, and you can't improve it. You know, you can't also, this is also a big one, you can't change it or hurt it or take it away. Nor can anybody else. You know. And so that's a huge freedom from bhayam. But also there's no threat for you to be angry at anybody or to be angry at yourself. Right? Anger, these bhaya and krodha don't apply to yourself. The instant the jiva comes means ajnanam, the jiva srishti, the projection of your being onto the creation, now the jiva rises, then all of these things, raga, dvesha, bhaya, hetu, the baya krodha, all of these things come about because of the projection. If I'm projecting ananda or my being onto something out here, This is a fear-based reality. It's dual. Everything is subject to birth and death. Everything is subject to change. Somebody can take it away from me. All of this emotional soup comes immediately. The world divides itself up into raga dvesha. That's dvaita. That's duality. So you get the likes and your dislikes. You get the fear of not being able to fulfill them or have things the way you want. You have the krodha, the anger, even directed toward yourself or toward others because they're obstructing. Your ananda, the ananda that doesn't exist out here, is being obstructed. That's the maya. That's the what we call moha. Moha is the ajnanam-based delusion that my ananda is out here and I need to seek it. So moha means delusion, the ajnana-based delusion that my ananda, what I seek, exists in the creation. And really, it's just this anyonya adhyasa, this mutual superimposition. So here, what he says, vita raga bhaya krodaihi. By those ones who are free of the raga, dvesha, bhaya, and krodha, those ones who are munibhis. So these are just attributes of the adhikari, of the qualified student. The munibhis, a muni is somebody who is mananashila. Mananashila means, shila means they have the tendency, the capacity to do manana, to do inquiry, to have disciplined thinking, to be able to use logic, you know, to be able to think things through, to apply their mind. Because here in the removal of ajnanam, in terms of the situation that we find ourselves in here, and we want to know the self, you have to be able to think. You know, you have to have a mind that is available to thinking, to using logic, to thinking through things through. And so that contemplative mind, but the mananam is more than just contemplation in terms of nididhyasana. It's contemplation in terms of being able to apply your mind, to think things through. The shravana, where we can say that to even want to do shravana, if we look at shravana, manana, nididhyasana, you need that viveka vairagya. The shama, dhamma, upadati, titiksha, all of these qualifications, you need that viveka discrimination, the vairagya, the mumukshutvam, or there's nobody there to want to do the shravana, to want to gain this knowledge, because you already have an answer that you can achieve for yourself. But then, so you have that mumukshutvam, now you also have to be able to think. You have to have a mind that can apply itself and think through. Because the Vedas, the Upanishads, really, they are a teaching methodology, you know, that takes place over time. We use words, we use sentences, we point things out. There's a lot of logic that's involved. There's a lot of understanding that's involved. Right? But the whole problem is one of removal of ignorance. And here you are stuck in this world, you know, with sense organs and mind that are only directed outward. That means the relationship between your mind and sense organs and yourself is one of ajnanam, because ignorance, because there's no means of knowledge sitting in the upadi, in this body, mind, sense organs, that gives you knowledge of the conscious being that you are, just in and of yourself. That means the knowledge that you have of yourself, since you are a conscious being, that knowledge is there, it's what we call samanya jnanam. Samanya jnana means the general knowledge. I'm a conscious being. But that's it. I'm a conscious being, but I have no idea what that means. Outside of I exist and I'm consciousness. I don't know where the consciousness comes from, etc. I don't know if it's bound by time, if it's subject to birth and death. I don't know the relationship of my consciousness to your consciousness. I love to be happy. I don't know where the happiness comes from. You know, I know happiness, but I don't know where it comes from. I know wholeness, but I don't know where it comes from. It seems to come and go. Existence seems to come and go because the body dies. Consciousness comes and goes. When I go to sleep, the body dies. What happens to consciousness when the body dies? What happens to me when the body dies? I don't know. But I do know I have the general appreciation of myself as a conscious being who can be happy. Right? It's not that these are unknown. I'm a conscious being who can be happy. That is known, samanyak jnanam. But I don't have any visheshak jnanam at all. So the visheshak means what the consciousness is, what my existence is, what the anand is, where is it, what is it. I don't know that. But it's not that I don't have a self-experience. I do, as a conscious being. So the Upanishads, first of all, I have to recognize the problem so that I want to do shravana, that I can sit before a teacher and listen to all of this. And I have to have a mind that's available for thinking, for viveka, doing discrimination. That's the manana. So by those people who have that mumukshutvam, you know, who are mature in the mumukshutvam, who have that ability to think, and who are Veda Padagaihi, those who have gone to the other side of the Vedas. Last week I said Pada, but Veda Padagaihi, by those who have gone to the Pada, the other shore of the Vedas, means they have grasped what the Vedas have to say, the vision of the Vedas. They've gone to the other side. We use this image, you know, of the boatman taking you across to the other side of the river, where the Vedas are the boat, right? So you come finally, you make it, yeah. As a mumukshu, you get to the boatman. He takes the boat to the other side of the river, and then you go on your way. You don't have to take the boat with you. He just takes you over. So you have to, when you get to the other side of the Vedas, it means they've crossed over, they've taken you over this ocean or this river of samsara and dropped you on the other shore, on the other side. And so for these ones who have this samyak darshana, this clear vision, it's liberation, they have self-knowledge, they are munis. They are capable of this clarity of thought. For them, this baya and krodha and raga dvesha, these things have dropped because they have self-knowledge. Right? They have self-knowledge because they've been taken to the other shore by the Vedas, the other side of samsara by the Vedas. The ajnanam has been removed. And so for those people, nirvikalpaha hi ayam drishtha, ayam, this Atma, Drishtaha, is seen without any vikalpa, nirvikalpa, here, without any vikalpa. Vikalpa means, am I the prana? Am I the body? Am I the mind? Am I the sense organs? He's been through all these vikalpas, all of these things I could be. But for the one who knows the self, by whom the self is drishta, it is seen, means recognized. I have recognized myself. There is no vikalpa. There is only me, the one Satchitatma, you know, without any confusion about taking myself to be anything else. And that self which is seen is prapancha upashamaha. The whole creation has resolved into that self. The prapancha means this entire creation is upashamaha. Now, there's two ways to take that. With my eyes open, while I'm experiencing the creation and my body and sense organs and mind, even with my eyes open and the whole creation, body, mind, sense organs, and whatever I see in my sense organs, can be prapancha upashamaha. This whole creation of duality is resolved into Satchitananda, my being. Just like if I look at, say, if I look at a clay relief, a bas relief statue, carving in a big block of clay. If I look at that and I see all of the intricate details of this carved block of clay, all of it can easily for me resolve into just clay. The nama rupa doesn't make any difference at all, because the clayness of all of the nama rupas, of all of the names and forms, is so clear. Or I can shut my eyes, you know, or smooth out, shut my eyes. And so in this case, if I have my eyes open, the Satchitananda as the very substance of what is here, the clay, the Satchit as the very being of what is here, is aparoksha, is clear. There's no, that is, aparoksha means it's directly recognized, the fact of it. That this is all just Satchitatma, the Satchitatma me. I see it clearly. The viveka is clearly there. Or I can, through nididhyasana, close my eyes, resolve all of my thoughts just into me. Just resolve this creation into me. One is like a Saguna Brahma, one is Nirguna Brahma. But Saguna Brahma or Nirguna Brahma is still only Brahman. If it's not, if I can't see this prapancha upashamaha, if I can't see, upashama means that resolution of the prapancha, which is advaya, the non-duality. If I can't appreciate non-duality with my eyes open, then I can't appreciate non-duality. You know why? Because I have to leave duality behind. I have to leave the duality behind in order to have an experience of non-duality, which means this experience of duality makes for two. I have the non-dual. Close my eyes, there's non-dual. Open them, dual. So we have the dual experience and then the non-dual. I have to be able to have my eyes open and closed. And in either case, it's advaita. Just like if you think of the clay, the bas relief paint sculpture in a big block of clay, you don't think, okay, let me wipe out the sculpture so can I appreciate the clay. Okay, let me put the sculpture back so now I can appreciate the sculpture. We don't ever think like that. It's not necessary. You can see clay and you can see Namarupa as only clay. Or you can focus just on the clay, or the clay with the Namarupa, the clay with name and form, the clay with Namarupa doesn't make clay and Namarupa. It's still Advaita. If I just focus on the clay, there's Advaita. If I focus on the clay with the Namarupa, there's still Advaita. That's Advaita. Right? The other's not Advaita. That's Sankhya. Mm-hmm. I've got the creation over here and the little conscious beings over here. The conscious beings are, each one of them is non-dual. One non-dual Satchitananda conscious being, non-dual Satchitananda conscious being. And then the Prakriti, which is Sattva, Rajas, and Tamas, which is totally a manifestation of infinite duality. Right? So what are you going to say? Is this dual or non-dual, that I have an infinite duality of the Prakriti and then the little, the countless non-dual Purushas? That's duality, right? Where's the non-duality? Even if you say there's more than one non-dual Purusha, there's two non-dual Purushas. It's a screwed up in terms of language. It's, you know, that's not Advaita. Advaita is one without a second. That means this creation cannot negate duality. You have to see this all as gone. You have to recognize the Satchitananda as the very substance of this, like the clay. You have, that viveka has to be there. So he says, like this, so this ayamatma, this atma, is seen. This atma, which is nirvikalpa, means there is no division. There is no second thing it can be. It's nirvikalpa. And for this nirvikalpa atma, there's no vikalpas, there's no other. Here they're using nirvikalpa like this. There's no, because of the prior, what's going before. There's no other vikalpas. There's no other ideas about what you can be. There's no thought, well, I could be the prana, or I could be the body, or I could be the mind, or I could be the transmigrating jiva, you know, Or I can be Ishwara's imagination. I can be this or that or this or that. There's no such vikalpas. Who I am is very clear, and who I am is Advaya, non-dual. And this non-dual Atma, the entire prapancha, the entire creation, everything that exists on every level of duality resolves into that Satchitatma as its very adhishtana, as the very being, the very thing that is there, the very substance of what is there. This all becomes mitya. It becomes mitya. Once it becomes mitya, there's prapancha upashamaha. The prapancha resolves into the Advaya Atma, the non-dual Atma. That is the state of the Samyak Darshanam. So this is what they're describing here. This is that Samyak Darshana. This is what it is for the Adhikari. And the Adhikari, so the first line is the Adhikari. The Adhikari is the Vitaraga Bhayakrodaihi, the one who is free of this, you know, of this raga and dvesha and fear, the likes and dislikes and fear and anger and all of this. Why are they free of it? Because of manana. They're able to do, they have that clarity of thinking. They're able to have that viveka, that discrimination. And because they have that quality, they've crossed to the other side of the Vedas. The Veda Padagaihi. Those people have gone to the other side of the Vedas, having this manana shila, this ability to think, having been exposed to the pramana and have a mind that can deal with that knowledge, you know, and having the adhikaritvam, you know, that starts out with viveka vairagya, you know, and mumukshitvam starts out with the viveka, this cannot take me where I want to go. What I want as a human being, the world can't give it to me. Now, I see that it's all anitya. That resolves into the recognition of nitya. Nitya, anitya, vastu viveka. I am nitya. This is anitya. Vairagya. Vairagya means this cannot give me anything lasting. That's the mumukshu. Vairagya for the jnani is I am whole. I don't need anything else. I am the ananda that I've always sought. That's the vairagya for the jnani. For the ajnani, it's this can't give me it. For the jnani, I am that which I seek. Mumukshutvam. I do not have a solution. I need to be liberated. This world cannot give me what I seek. I'm seeking moksha to how to solve this problem. Moksha is the solution of that problem. I am liberated. I desire liberation. I am liberated. The moksha, that mumukshitvam, here they say that mumukshitvam has to change, convert into jignasa.
Mm.
You have to become a jignasu, one who desires knowledge.
Mm.
The teacher does that for you. And then the moksha really becomes jnanam.
Mm.
Moksha is atma jnanam, self-knowledge. That's what it is. Because the self is already liberated. And that self-knowledge is what? It's for the one who has these qualifications. Nirvikalpaha ayam drishtaha, this self, which is nirvikalpa, free of any type of doubt, is there. And that self that is free of any type of doubt, nirvikalpa, the nirvikalpa atma, which is seen clearly, is advaya. It's non-dual. The whole prapancha has resolved into that. Just like the pot resolves into the clay, or all of the waves resolve into the water. The whole prapancha resolves into the one advaya, non-dual. And what is that non-dual? That non-dual atma, which is my being. And for that, there's nirvikalpa, there's no doubt. So that's this verse. The next verse we'll do next time. The next verse, the question goes, he says, therefore, tasmat evam viditva enam, therefore, having known this Atma in this way, one has to keep remembering it. It means keep doing nididhyasana. I'll tell you about that. Because you gain this knowledge, but then the mind can be pulled away. If the mind is pulled away, what do you have to do? To pull it back. sorry, then he talks, he's going to talk about the Nididhyasana as a means for giving the mind an opportunity to sit in this knowledge that has been gained clearly, if for whatever reason it keeps being pulled out. So that's what this next verse is. We'll do the next verse next week. Yeah. Just take a moment. Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavasishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.
It almost seems natural for the mind to be pulled by the creation.
Oh yeah, totally, because it's part of it. It exists, the mind, the body, mind, sense organs all exist within duality, right? So they're players. Just like if you have a... just like if you have a dream, you know, the body, mind, sense organs become as part of the dream in the same order of reality. Right, and the Atma is of a totally different order of reality. It's Satyam Mitya. Because whether it's Vyavahara or Pratibhasika, Jiva Srishti or Ishvara Srishti, it's Mitya. It's the same, you know, the relationship that Pratibhasika and Vyavahara have to Brahman is one of Satyam Mitya. The Satyam is Brahman, Mitya is both Pratibhasika and Vyavahara, the Jiva Srishti and Ishvara Srishti. And so this body, mind, sense organs is meant to participate within the creation. Everything about this body, mind, sense organs is designed to be part of this dual creation.
So you should expect that pulling.
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah, yeah, and that's why Nididhyasana is important, because even with the clarity of your knowledge, the ajnana may not be there, but the habitual being pulled out, habitually being pulled out into the world is still there.
Yeah.
Because you have lifetimes of it, and everybody else is doing it. You know?
I'm so glad you're saying this. I spent the whole time during class being triggered. I checked my email, and there's an email from my dad, and we're doing travel plans, and I haven't seen him in 8 years, but I get very triggered by my dad in certain ways, and this is what's happening.
Yeah.
It's like right on point with the class. But it was really hard to follow. I'm so glad there's a recording of it. Listen again.
Oh, you should leave that at home.
How long are you going to...
I'll be like 3 days with him.
3 days with him?
More than...
That's a long time, isn't it?
Yeah,
30, 40. It'll go fast.
I hope so. But I'm just wondering, do you have anything to say about like when you're kind of caught up like that and it's class getting present again?
Oh, caught up in class?
Yeah, like just now. I mean, I'm talking about literally just now. I checked my email right as class was starting.
Yeah.
That was a mistake.
You know what? Sometimes that's hard to get out of.
Yeah.
You know, it is. You have to be ready for that because, you know, knowledge takes place, Shravana takes place over a long period of time. And, so, you know, not 1 or 2 days. To get all of this really, mind understanding and absorbing it on every level, you know, that takes place over time. And you're going to be in class sometimes where something has upset you.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of the words are coming and everything.
They don't work.
But they don't enter. Because at that time, that Vita Raga Bhaya Krodha, that's not, all those things are there.
I missed what those words mean. I've heard them.
Mean that that
so gone.
That those likes and dislikes and fears and anger and all these emotions, those things are all happening. They're all happening, and so the mind doesn't have the shanti to really receive this knowledge at that time. So you'll probably spend many classes like that or parts of classes like that. You're in class and all you can't hear a thing because you're emotionally upset.
Yeah.
You know? I've had many classes like that. Just sit there.
So
and
it's just kind of, I mean, so kind of accept what you were just saying is the human condition
that.
Because we're designed to be a part of creation. We get pulled into it and
it
happened.
But
yeah.
The thing is to even be interested in Vedanta at all, that a certain amount of the shravana, of that viveka and vairagya, that has to be there, or you would have no interest in it. But say, we all come with a certain enough viveka vairagya mumukshutvam to qualify us to be here. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here. But each one of these areas is going to mature, you know, as you expose yourself to this teaching, because things become clear. As things become clear, your viveka becomes stronger. The vairagya becomes stronger, but it takes place over time. And there's just a lot of, you come to this knowledge with a lot of habits, with a lot of desires. And the desires were real desires, not mithya desires.
Mm.
You know?
Mm.
There weren't preferences.
Mm.
They're needs.
Mm.
I need things to be like this in order for me to be a whole, complete being. So we have a handful of those. All you need is 1 or 2 to make things miserable. You don't need a handful. You just need a couple, you know.
But it's strange. How should you look at that pulling dynamics? I mean, it...
As natural.
Yeah,
it's natural, but...
But your knowledge now becomes more natural. So you learn how to pull. This is what nididhyasana. We'll do a lot of that next week.
Hmm.
But that nididhyasana is important, you know, to be able to, even while you're walking around and engaged in your life, to take these momentary timeouts. It's almost like between thoughts where your mind just, you're able to just relax and bring your mind back to yourself.
Well, that would be a great skill.
But any skill has to be practiced.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
You know?
This thing about Vita Raga Bhaya Krodha, to be free of or unafflicted by?
Yeah, free of.
Free of.
Yeah.
Desire, anger, and fear. For a jnani, how literal? How literal
you
is that?
You have to think in terms of satya mitya. Like, for instance, the raga dvesha.
Right.
Instead of being the full-blown template, I want this so I can be happy, I don't want this so I can be happy. That's full-blown raga dvesha. Becomes mitya, becomes a preference. I want this, but my ananda is not dependent on it.
Mm-hmm.
And so then if there's a krodha, an irritation,
mm-hmm.
I can easily let it go because it's not real.
Okay.
It's only when it's real. I mean, anger, you can be tired and get irritable,
mm-hmm.
but underneath there's no one who's really mm-hmm. irritable.
Okay.
So, you know, it doesn't hold
you. It's
not
that it never arises, but it doesn't really have the hook
exactly.
or the sting anymore that it used to have.
That's exactly it.
Mm-hmm.
Same with bhaya.
Mm-hmm.
Same with fear. It's dismissible.
So what do you do when that's there? You think that this is only mitya and I'm satyam? You do that?
Yes, but it's not just words.
Yeah.
When you think of something as mitya, it's because you're recognizing your own being, this I am atma, who you actually are.
Yeah, that has to be there.
Yeah. And see, the thing is you're fine. in reality, nothing is happening to you. You are absolutely fine, but sometimes the mind gets carried away because of habitual habit, lifetimes of it, you know? And so sometimes you just have to bring your mind back to yourself, which is bringing your knowledge. Everything becomes mitya and you become the satyam. It all becomes clear. So you just learn how to do this, what we call nididhyasana. Nididhyasana doesn't mean that is only when you're just sitting, you're sitting cross-legged and meditating. That's what we think about with meditation, but actually nididhyasana happens all the time. It's every time you bring your mind to yourself, to knowledge.
So it's not nirvikalpa samadhi at all. It's almost, it's totally different. It's actually the active process of bringing...
Well, nirvikalpa, now when we say, literally, when we are talking nirvikalpa samadhi, we're using the word samadhi, okay? Usually what we mean by that is that at that time, we're bringing the mind just totally into myself, the Atma, so that there is no vikalpa experienced at all, just me alone, conscious being. That's nirvikalpa samadhi versus savikalpa samadhi. With savikalpa samadhi, I can be experienced the whole Ishvara, but as my being.
Mm-hmm.
The namarupas, you know.
So doing nididhyasana, you could have either one of those, and maybe
that's
only
right.
Momentarily.
See, you have to think like this.
Okay.
You have to be able to have both. I am Ishvara.
Mm.
And that has to be real. That means where I see all of this as my being. I am Ishvara, or I am Brahman. If I say I am Brahman, you know, then I'm only focusing on the consciousness itself. If I say I am Ishvara, I'm seeing all of this as my being. Right? I don't need to eradicate all nama-rupa in order to recognize that all nama-rupa is my being. Vedanta is not just... If I were to take one Mahavakya, it would be I am Ishvara versus I am Brahman, even though both are absolutely correct.
Mm-hmm.
But... If we stop with just I am Brahman, in your mind you can think that I have to recognize I am Brahman, I am just pure Satchitananda, not this.
Yeah.
But what really I have to be able to say, I am Ishvara. Ishvara is Brahman with this Maya Upadhi. Right? It means that all of this is me.
Mm-hmm.
If I say I am Ishvara, all of this is me. So if I say, for Jnani, if I say I am Brahman or I am Ishvara, I'm saying the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Maya Upadhi belongs to Brahman. It's an incidental attribute of Brahman, right? There's no Maya without Brahman. Maya is Mitya. So I can just say I am Brahman. And then for me as a Jnani, I know that all of this is Brahman. I am Brahman, all of this is Brahman. There's nothing that's not Brahman.
But there's a transition there from I am Brahman to be able to say I am all of this. There's a leap there.
The leap is Vedanta. That leap is knowledge. Remember, the knowledge really is the Mahavakya. The Mahavakya is you are that. You know?
Mm-hmm.
I am infinite. I am Brahman. The jiva is Ishvara. That's the Mahavakya. It's not just that I am pure conscious being.
Well, I've been on that for a long time.
But you can say I am just pure conscious being as long as you recognize that there is nothing but pure conscious being. See what I mean? Like if you, otherwise you're saying, I am just pure conscious being, that's all. If in the saying of that, you're leaving out anything else, then that's dvaita.
Yeah.
So you have to be able to say, I am the whole.
Yeah.
And know what that means. It's not just words. I mean, you have to understand it. And this, that's why you say the jiva, this body, mind, sense organs, jiva, really surrenders, not to Brahman, but to Ishwara. Mm-hmm. This body, mind, sense organ surrenders to Ishwara. What that means is that you recognize that the jiva upadi is part and parcel of Ishwara, right? And Ishwara, right, is Brahman. Brahman with the maya upadi is Ishwara. But where do you, what do you do with this jiva? This jiva is part of Ishwara.
Mm.
It's like the wave surrendering to the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the wave, it doesn't have to surrender to the water. The wave is water, but the wave has to realize that it really is part and parcel of the ocean. And this jiva is part and parcel of Ishwara, you know. That's why the jnani can just allow Ishwara to unfold, and I just do what is to be done.
Don't you need to make the viveka that I am Brahman first? It's sort of like doing drikdrisha before.
You do, you know why you do, yeah. I mean, there's many different orders of teaching, okay? But that is the most common, because until I do that drikdrisha, see or seeing differentiation, I'm so identified with myself as being this body, mind, sense organs, what's the path to my recognizing, you know, I am Ishwara? Right? Because this body, mind, sense organs is a part of Ishwara, but I am the self, which is the self of Ishwara. Right, so that viveka, we do need to make that viveka. You can do it, and Swamiji's more doing that now in terms of karya karana, satya mitya, which is a little bit different emphasis in the way he's unfolding that, but you have to end up in the same place.
Yeah, you mean he's starting more with Ishwara and then going to Brahman?
In a way.
You know, it seems like there'd be something like, even with the Sankhya system, that it's easy to bypass. If you don't include Ishwara, like there's a kind of enormous bypass that goes on, and then I think all of the things that happen that go on with the body mind sense complex become really disturbing, rather than part of the maya upadi or part of Ishwara. Like Swamiji's, you know, this kind of bringing Ishwara into your life was always for me the greatest psychosomatic empath that I could have. You know, is the only way to really, because psychologically there's the pull that I'm not that. And I think that there's, because there's also the distinctions come in, you know.
Oh, in Sankhya there's the pull that you're not that.
No, I mean, I think psychologically there is, because psychologically there'll be, you know, I'm feeling anger, I'm feeling, you know, fear, Brahman's not supposed to have any of that.
Yeah.
I have that. You know what
I
mean?
Yeah,
so there's,
I see, yeah.
There becomes that psychosomatic kind of dualistic split that in a lot of ways doesn't get rectified. And what happens is that I think there's a kind of convenience factor when one does goes to something like Drikdrisha Vivekaha without maybe having a lot of the vision or the adhikaritvam. And so then there's the ongoing split or rejection. And so in that way,
that's
caused
by the drikdrisha.
No, that's caused by a sort of a lack of understanding, so that I, you know, because I don't want to suffer, I'm not explaining this right. Like I don't want to suffer, so I like that I am Satyam. I like that I am Brahman.
Yeah.
And I don't like that I am also Mithya.
I see.
So it becomes the drikdrisha vivekaha, like, oh, I'm not that. I'm not that. Thank God, I'm not that. But I think that also is a psychological disturbance, that until I'm also that, it's not another separate thing. And then I become an empath, you know,
yeah,
to myself.
Yeah. I think I understand what you mean.
Yeah.
It's true. There can't be that dvaita there. Yeah. And there's also there's a resolution into Ishwara, too. Letting the whole upadi be Ishwara.
Yeah.
Because
still,
it is.
It's still a hurdle. That's a small hurdle still there, you know? I mean, I would say to myself, I want to see it that way. But
there's a maturity, There's a lot of vairagya. The more vairagya, the less hurdle. But the vairagya is something that grows and grows, you know. Mm-hmm. With vairagya, there's such a... What it really means is that with vairagya, there's less and less in you that is asking the creation to be a certain way.
Yeah.
Including you, your body, mind, sense organs.
Because there's no well-being there. I mean, you can't find it.
Well, also, you know, it's... Yeah, it's mithya. You know, it's endless. It can never be good enough. No, that's a big thing. That's a huge thing, actually. It's very humbling. You can never really be good enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's all samsara. It's all mithya. It's not going to... You're going to be good and good and good and good, but it's not...
It's all falling apart.
It won't end.
It doesn't end, yeah.
It doesn't end, yeah.
It's imperfect by nature. Mm-hmm. Perfect by nature, mm-hmm. If you allow what is imperfect to be perfect. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And to see all the laws playing out, you know. It's really...
It's a good text.
The only thing that's perfect is the non-dual, is Brahman, you know. Everything else is very complicated.
Parts.
Very complicated, and even the emotional system, everything is very complex and multidimensional also, even in terms of your own prarabdha, in terms of your own karma, in terms of all of the relationships, the network of relationships. You know, it's not all easy. You know, so we all love each other and everything's in Swargaloka. We're not in Swargaloka here. You have to accept that too, you know, like all your relationships, your familial relationships, your work relationships. You know, don't think that when you get knowledge, it's all just, everybody becomes really nice and you just are, everything's just fine. You know what, it just really isn't. The only thing is that you yourself may not be getting entangled in it because you're fine, you're all right with that, because you're not demanding that it be different than that. And so you just deal with it objectively. But that's a lot different than thinking, oh, everything's supposed to be
heavenly.
Fine. You know, it isn't that way. And sometimes I look at Swamiji's life and I think, oh my God. The complexity, with the complexities and
right.
the difficulties,
right.
not just in the Vyavahara, but I mean, what I mean is even in all of the myriad of relationships and likes and dislikes, and it's not like he's a great Mahatma and then everybody is just happy. Half the people are miserable and upset about this and upset about that, and he didn't do this and he didn't do that, and why did you do this and why didn't you do that? It's not like you are a great Mahatma and we're all happy and we're all pranaming to you because you're this wonderful Mahatma, which is true. Which is true, you know? You're this great, incredible, beautiful, beautiful, saintly person. You know? And why did you do this? And why did you... Oh my God. Because it's the way of things. So if you think it's supposed to be really all that easy, the only thing, the easiness is in your own interest in Ishwara. You know what I mean? Where you're not you're not demanding perfection. Then you have to say, well, what do I mean by perfection? Well, that everybody be loving and happy all the time.
And treat me well.
So the 50-50
and that
thing,
you treat everybody well.
The 50-50 thing continues.
Yes, it does. It's just that your relationship to it is much different because that ajnana is not there. So your relationship to it is much, much different. Atma has no problems. That's the one thing. Yourself is constant. Doesn't change on you. And your mind, because of that, your mind has a great deal of shanti compared to what it would have without that knowledge. Mm-hmm. Because what its attachment is to, that which is really changeless and is not, can't be taken away. That's why they say that vita, you know, raga, bhaya, krodha, those things really aren't there. If they're there, they're just mithya. Mm-hmm. Because nothing can take you away from yourself. And yourself is the ananda that you've sought. You know? And you recognize I am that and nobody can do anything about it. Not even Ishwara. That's
it. And you can't, in addition to that, you can't screw up with it.
I check, thanks. You can't screw it up, no.
You can't screw
it up. When the ajnanam is gone, the ignorance is gone, then you really can't screw it up because you can't get the ignorance back. But that doesn't mean you're a perfect being either. The Atma is perfect. If you want somebody to be perfect, it's the non-dual Atma, no problem. But, you know, you're a person living in duality and we're not perfect. Perfect from somebody's eyes and very imperfect from somebody else's. It's really complicated. You just have to muddle along and do your best.
Sober last word.
Carol, could you just say again really quick? Vita, raga, bhaya, krodha, what are they?
Okay, vita means without, free from. Raga means it's positive desire. I want this. I like this. I want this. I need this. I like this. Bhaya is fear. Krodha is anger. So vita, raga, bhaya, krodha.
And vikalpa is...
A vikalpa is a doubt or taking, dividing something into two.
Okay.
Yeah.
He translates it as imagination, but it's not just like a metaphysis. It's just
no,
any division.
That's not a good. It's not a good translation. So when he's saying, and Shankara says in his commentary, Gaudapada had made all kinds of vikalpas. The self could be this. The self could be this. The self could be this. For Jnani, those vikalpas aren't there. The self is the self.
Okay.
There's no vikalpa at all.
Okay.
Because you know. So there's no projection, there's no projection. So he can be using imagination. You're not taking yourself to be this, or that you're not imagining it as this,
okay.
Imagining it as that. That's how he's
falsely imputing or superimposing division when there isn't.
But yeah, for you, as Jnani, those vikalpas aren't there. Those mistaken identifications.
So nirvikalpa, not in the context of nirvikalpa samadhi, nirvikalpa just means not.
Without
not
any
having those divisions.
There's
those.
No doubts.
No doubts.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's no mistaken identifications. I don't take myself to be this or that or this or that.
Okay.
There's only me. I take myself to be me, the me that I am, without any projections, mistakes. I don't imagine myself to be differently than what I am. That's how he's using.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. We covered some material tonight, didn't we?
Yes, we did.
So, are classes just continuing, or is there a holidays kind of schedule?